The following audio may contain coarse language and other material that may not be suitable for a younger audience. Viewer discretion is advised. Also, we may spoil anything and everything, so you have been warned.
I'm Ben Howard.
I'm Trevor Flynn.
And this is the Movie Gang Podcast. Limited gang this week. We're getting intimate. We're getting intimate about a very intimate, heady film.
And we have two very opposing opinions, it looks like.
Two heady opposing opinions. This is not going to be... This might be our least listened to cast ever, but it's okay. This is an interesting film we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about James Gray's new film, The Lost City of Z. Or Zed. We think we should decide that now, because he says Zed throughout the whole movie.
He just says Zed. It just never, like... Is the letter Z just pronounced Zed somewhere, sometimes?
It is officially pronounced Zed in England, usually.
Yeah, when you're just talking about
the letter.
My
English friend
itself
has never said Zed that I know of. So.
No. Well, English people in this movie don't talk like any English person like I've ever met in real life or anything. So... Or, like, that I've seen in any other period English film, for that matter, like, to my memory. But we'll get to that.
All right. Well, first up, we have trailers to talk about. First up, we have The Kingsman: The Golden Circle, the sequel to The Kingsman film from a couple years ago, still directed by... Oh, man, I forget his name. So sorry, everybody. The guy who directed... X-Men First Class and Kick-Ass and other movies that I find a little bit overrated, which I guess the same way I feel about Kingsman. Did you see the original Kingsman
film? I did not. I almost did. I thought, like, oh yeah, he's got a machine gun in his umbrella. That's cool. And it's Colin Firth. I passed it, man.
It's definitely a very fun movie. There's like a fun sequence where he kills equivalent of the Westboro Baptist Church to the theme of Freebird, which everyone loves. There's a bit of camp and silliness to it that's extreme. I just find that both those movies have crazy tonal issues. But I'll say I'm curious about this one. At the very least, visually, I found the trailer very, very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that and the Sinatra song, it's hard not to get like a little into that, I guess.
I always love a trailer that builds its entire theme around a single song or single sound or something like that.
I'll say this. Like, this trailer with the Sinatra song is better than, like, the King Arthur trailer with just, like, a Led Zeppelin song that's just there to get you pumped because it's a Led Zeppelin song, as far as I know. I think it was When the Levee Breaks. I can't remember which one it was. But
I think it was Immigrant Song.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
Yeah, and see, the Immigrant Song already has an amazing trailer to it, which is the trailer for The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, mm-hmm. which has the great editing where it edits on the beat every single time, and it's fucking perfect.
Yeah.
So, don't even bother.
It's a good trailer, I thought. Like, I sat down to watch it with my girlfriend, she's like, hey, I don't know, like, the whole movie already. That's a good trailer. That's what a trailer should be. So that's good.
Yeah, I mean, it gives away one big thing, which is that Colin Firth, you don't know this, but he looked like he died in the first movie.
Yeah.
And they have straight up been like, nope, he did not die. So I thought it was interesting that they were like, that's not going to be a big reveal. So,
well, like the first one I got this real campy tone from is like the whole kind of idea of James Bond and gadgets ramped up to 11. But like this one, it seemed like they were going for it to be kind of darker. Like, I don't know.
I feel like in some senses, but you still have like Channing Tatum as a cowboy agent.
Was he like... Why is he a cowboy agent? Is he from America and he's just like the one American and it's stereotypical? Or was he like actually wearing spurs or something? Did I miss that?
Yeah, well, apparently there's like the American, the Kingsmen are the British and the Statesmen are the American version.
Oh,
and so his character is tequila, you know? And he's
like,
classic cheesiness.
That's my hope is that they
go for the silly more than the serious, because I think that's where the first film kind of
failed
for me. Yeah,
that's what it
looks
like for sure. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about a film we have both seen, which is a very interesting Alien Covenant, which actually answers a big question of what the fuck happened at the end of Prometheus.
Yeah, right? That was a God, fuck that movie. I'm sorry. That's just...
I don't like it either.
I remember watching that for the first time, and I, you know, I'm not, like, way into the Alien franchise or everything, so I don't understand, like, the significance of it. But, I, you know, I've seen Aliens, and I love Aliens. I wasn't, like, there for Alien. It's kind of late for me to jump on that train, like the original one, I guess. But I remember when we watched Prometheus in college, and we were all drinking too much just for that movie, and we just... God, Will was, like, the classics major, and he was just into it because, like, it was called Prometheus and had all these, like, visual metaphor, like, allegory, like, God and man, like, your created thing going. And, like, he and Jack just, like, fought so hard over that movie. They were just too drunk to make reasonable arguments, but it was just... It was, like, I remember Jack at some point literally just said, can we just agree on what we just saw? Can we just, like, look at it, really? It was not... God damn. Yeah, I did not particularly like Prometheus. I don't know if I'm going to see this, honestly. It's better than the last trailer, which was just kind of like ripping off Aliens.
Yeah, so this is sort of interesting because at the end of Prometheus, for people who may not remember, the only two people left alive are Elizabeth Shaw, played by Noomi Rapace, and the android David, played by Michael Fassbender. And they go, we're going to go find the people who made us. And they leave on a ship. And they show that they did in fact find the people that made us. And it kind of implies that David bombed the shit out of them with a bunch of alien pods. Which is fascinating. So I'm not sure if we're going to see any of that in the new movie. But it's sort of an interesting way to wrap up.
I don't know
about this movie.
I didn't even remember that they escaped the planet. I thought they were just stranded there and they were going to die. Did the ship, like, take off at the end? Because I totally forgot that, if that happened.
I don't think the ship took off at the end. I think they just were like, we're going to leave. And also, there was, like, a quick point where, like, an engineer had an alien come out of him and everyone's like, oh, yeah, this is an alien movie.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I remember as the end. Like, everyone is dead and then hook for the next movie. That's what I remember.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, part of me is, I don't know about this Alien Covenant, because it looks like it's just being alien again. You know, like, at the very least, Prometheus pretended like it was going to be a heavy David Lindelof exploration of deep themes with no answers, which makes me love Leftovers, but makes me hate this movie. You know, like, it works for certain stories, not for others. But this one just looks like aliens, blah, scary. And I don't know. I'm tired of that. And
yeah.
Maybe it'll be good, but I just don't know if it's going to be. I don't know if losing Damon Lindelof is the answer that's going to fix the franchise. I doubt it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, man. I'll probably not see this one.
Yeah, I don't know. I have a abusive housewife-ish relationship to the Alien franchise because Alien is one of my favorite films of all time, and Aliens is another favorite of mine, and the other third ones are, you know, you see the spark of what's there, but not at all enough. And
this is like one of those moments I just want to protest and, like, stay home and watch the original instead, because I haven't seen it. Like, when Ghost in the Shell came out, I didn't go see it. I just sat home and watched Blade Runner instead. Now I don't want to go see this, and I'll watch Alien that weekend instead.
That's probably the better choice, I would say.
Yeah. Is Alien still scary? Is it like actually still scary?
I think it's suspenseful. Me and Peter watched it, and Peter, for the first time, he found it more just suspenseful than scary, and I would agree. It's more just like good creeping dread, but I don't think anything's going to make you go like, oh, I can't sleep.
Yeah.
Just thinking about them aliens. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a very well-made... What I like about Alien is it's just so goddamn tight and perfect. And that's why Alien Covenant, I'm like, no. This is trying to be a sequel to Prometheus, which is way too heady, but also trying to be a genre film. But now it's just trying to be a genre film, and it's got James Franco in it. It's just like, there's too many things. Once you had James Franco, the stew is too much at that point.
Stew is too much. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. For you, the listener of the Movie Gang podcast, Loot Crate is offering an opportunity to save on any new subscription at lootcrate.com. To save 10% on any new subscription, go to trylootcrate.com/gang and enter promo code BRIDGE10 for 10% savings. So maybe you're wondering, what is Loot Crate? Well, Loot Crate is a monthly mystery crate that delivers the best in geek and gaming gear, from collectibles, apparel, tech gadgets, art, and other epic gear, and it changes every single month. They have properties like Marvel and Star Wars and DC, everything that a nerd could possibly want. And for less than $20 a month, you get 6 to 8 items that include licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, and unique one-of-a-kind items. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate. And when that cutoff is over, it's over. You can't get that crate anymore. And a lot of these items are exclusive to Loot Crate. So you want to get on this as soon as possible. Every month you don't sign up, you are missing out on cool new stuff. So, again, be sure to check out Loot Crate by going to trylootcrate.com/gang to save 10% off new prescription and enter promo code BRIDGE10 for 10% savings. All right, this week we are talking about the Lost City of Zed. Or Z. I'm going to go with Z. I'm sticking with Z. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, we never decide. I'm good with Z. Let's not be... Yeah. Too pretentious.
Fuck 1800s people. We're in the modern American state, goddammit. At the dawn of the 20th century, British explorer Percy Fawcett journeys into the Amazon, where he discovers evidence of a previously unknown advanced civilization that may have once inhabited the region. Despite being ridiculed by the scientific establishment, which views indigenous population as savages, the determined Fawcett, supported by his devoted wife, son, and aide de camp, it's a weird choice. These synopsis are always weird. Returns to his beloved jungle in an attempt to prove his case. So, this, I feel like this film is often about failure. It is a lot about going to the jungle, trying to find things, and then coming back to England disappointed. So I guess the question,
several
the
times,
question is, did you come back to this movie disappointed?
It was a long movie, man. I had no idea, like, what I was getting into with this, like, how long, just, like, on paper of a film, like, the runtime is. I still don't know. I don't want to know.
It's 2 hours 20, so it's not
that was
the longest.
That was all?
But it is.
Jesus.
Yeah.
So.
But it is slow. It is a very slow-paced film. For
so,
sure.
There's, and I read the Rotten Tomatoes on it, and there's a quote in there about it being stately paced, and I just, I that intrigued me. I had to see what the fuck that meant, and I still don't know, because, like, like, they find the source, and, like, they succeed. They have some success on their first mission, right, to, like, chart the thing. And, like, find out where the river is so, like, Bolivia and Brazil don't go to war, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he's back in England and, or, well, the British colony in Ireland, isn't it? That was confusing for a minute. But
I think he's just in England.
Yeah.
I know.
Okay. But, and he gets this just lavish reception, and his, like, wife and child are there cheering. I thought he was dreaming. I thought, oh, no, we're not cutting to this, like, already. That doesn't. And then the film just kept going. I was like, oh, okay. What does the movie do now? And then they go back, and I'm like, oh, okay. All right. And then they fail. And then I thought, okay, God, sure. Okay. And when he like, collapsed in the battlefield of World War One, I thought that might be the end of the movie. And then they went back again! It's just like, what is wrong with you? Like, I don't even know, man. Like, I get it. Like, I get the passion and, like, the drive that he had to go and find the city. Oh man, I did not want to make that journey with him. It was so exhausting. And painful.
So it sounds like you were more dreading the parts in the Amazon than the parts in England.
No, like, that's the thing, though, is, like, the jungle parts are really good.
Right. That's where I seem to find most people's issue with this movie is that they wanted a lot less England and a lot more jungle.
Yeah, but that's not really what it's about. Like, it's not trying to be about, like, the actual expedition in the jungle as much as it is, like, the tension between, like, society and, like, what civilization is. And, like, that's... Go ahead. I could tell you were thinking something.
Yeah, I disagree with you on this movie. I really enjoyed it. I will admit that I am one a sucker for a slow-paced film. That doesn't mean if a film is slow-paced and I'm told that I'm supposed to like it, I won't. My classic example is a 7-hour movie called Satan Tango, which can I'll never watch again. I think what this film did very well for me is it is about failure in a very interesting way. And there is something narratively and emotionally upsetting about that, which is why I can understand why it is a very hard film to watch. Mm-hmm. It is not something I necessarily would recommend to most people, which is what makes it a difficult film to talk about in some ways. But it is a film that I think it is going to be one of those films that audiences and critics are definitely going to split on.
Oh, yeah. I totally like, see that. Sure. And, like,
because
I get where the critics are coming from.
It's so funny. I was looking up for the poster of this movie, and Robert Pattinson got cast pretty early on before Hunnam and other people. And so they were like, it's like a fan site for Robert Pattinson, and it's like hunky Robert Pattinson, like a shirt, and it's like, The Lost City of Z, A Quest to Find the Mystery or something. And it's like, and even the trailer's promoted as like some ish Indiana Jones thing. And this is about a guy going into the jungle and being very depressed once he comes home.
Right.
It is the Hurt Locker of jungle movies.
Oh, God.
I love Hurt Locker too. And I think I appeal to this sort of sense of a person feeling completely lost in regular society. And that's the parts that I found very interesting.
Yeah. I get that, and thematically, like, I think there's almost enough going for the movie for me to accept it on those terms, but just, like, in execution even, he is just so damn not likable. Like, he's not a prick, the protagonist. Like, he's not completely despicable or anything. But, I don't know, like, did British people really talk like that, like, back then? Is it really... Like, this is the most painfully, excruciatingly British thing I have ever seen. Like, it can't, you know, and I get it. They evoked that mood of, like, I mean, they had, like, his wife literally reading a Ray Bradbury poem in voiceover. So, like, yeah, they cheated. Like, they were, like, on the nose to evoke the thing. But also just, like, narratively, like you were saying, and, like, they do go for that, like, exploration, Heart of Darkness thing, and they achieve that. But the dialogue and the characters are just so wooden to me. Like, they speak the subtext, and it's, I can appreciate that it's like, it's the strength of its themes that carries the movie. But for me, I don't know. Like, I get the challenge of it, that it takes place over such a long course and that it has so much to do. But, ah, man, I just listening to him talk was just... There's this one line he has where he's like, yeah, he's talking about like his son and them going back, right? And he says something just so English. It's like he's smart as mustard, and I was just like, oh God, what am I watching? Like, it's just this is, and it plays it serious. That's the thing, as if it was more of a satire or more of like, I mean, obviously not, because it's not comedy, it's a drama. But like, if it was more. You know, like, it's a very self-aware film, it seems like, in terms of trying to capture, like, the arrogance and the prim and colonizing Britishness of the British. And that's what he's supposed to represent as a protagonist. But yeah. At the same time, it just doesn't go far enough for me, man. And, like, the feminist angle was part of that, too. Like, when he has that fight with his wife about gender roles... And
yeah,
that just gets dropped and never comes back again. I was like, oh man, you really tried, movie. That was a good try.
Well, there's something interesting about the choice in this character, in that the real Percy Fawcett was a lot more racist than the movie Percy Fawcett, from what I understand. And James Gray has admitted this, and he sort of is a more woke version of that, where he believes in this idea that the natives could be as advanced as the English were in their time, you know, in the mm-hmm. early days. And that's why I felt like the point of that sexism scene was to go that he, I feel like the ultimate reveal is that he isn't enlightened. He just wants to prove a point, that he wants to prove himself valuable more than to prove the natives value. I don't think he views the natives that much in any way, shape, or form. I think he just likes being an outsider. He likes being someone who can prove that something is inherently not the way people see it. And that's what I felt the sexism scene was going for. It was going for a set. Well, he's actually still, actually is a prick.
Yeah. No, I like
very much.
The funny thing about that is I agree with you in that that's not what it's really about for him, but I don't think the movie is, takes a strong enough direction in making that clear to the audience. Mm-hmm. You know, like I can definitely get that was your interpretation, and like I kind of got that, but I think you could very easily watch this movie and think that he is supposed to be thought of as that enlightened and that sympathetic from the way that he interacts with like the chieftain and appreciates their culture. And I mean, I don't know. It doesn't, and it just sucks for the wife character too, because like in the end she just becomes like the waiting woman, and they have like this, they have like a continual conversation about like him not wanting her to be that, but then she kind of like accepts her role in their relationship as doing that, and it's just, it's just, I don't know, man. It doesn't go quite far enough for me. It doesn't take a strong enough stance in terms of like trying to reconcile that, like that British arrogance with like, it's just so all on the nose too. Like he speaks like candidly about like British arrogance and all this, but I don't know. Maybe.
But when you have that floral language, you get beautiful lines like, he had an unfortunate choice of ancestors, which is like the best like old world style British aristocracy line I think I've ever heard.
Oh god. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing too, okay, is it's like when the portly gentleman that ruins their second attempt at the expedition as part of the society, just miraculously survives and meets him back at the table, like back in civilization, and just totally just throws shade at him and just dishonors him completely. It's like, no, you should apologize, like, and your wife should see it just to humiliate you, and is just being victimized the whole time. Like that, that scene is played so seriously and so dramatically that like that reputation is that important. And like, I get it, because that's what the movie's about, right? But just, it's hard for me to nail down. It's like, I'm just like, wow, I'm really supposed to take this seriously. You know, like, it contrast that moment when they're at looking at each other daggers across that conference table with just like the fact that people are dying left and right on the river and the jungle, and just like they're like deciding to go back over and over again because they have protagonist powers and just like are dodging spears left and right, kind of like it's that disconnect for me that just, this movie is in a really weird place tonally, and I get what it's going for, but it just doesn't. I loved Robert Pattinson. Let's talk about something I liked. I love Robert Pattinson. His character was so quirky, and just like, I annoyed my girlfriend a little bit actually, because like the first maybe act of the movie, I just, every time Robert Pattinson was on screen, I just kind of started chuckling because I just needed some release from, like, I mean, yeah, he was the comic relief, but he didn't even have to do anything funny. He just, like, the way he moved was so fucking, like, jerkily, like, academic, and he's got this just huge beard, and it's, like, Robert Pattinson, and it just, I don't know. That was, like, the one bright spot in this just so dourly toned film that just took itself so seriously, especially in contrast to the protagonist. Like, I just see him as, like, he just speaks his subtext the whole time, and I find him just so, like, on the nose as to be kind of painful in terms of, like, I don't think, I mean, maybe if you're not meant to empathize with him, that works, but
I think you're best to empathize with the just general quest, which I find interesting. I think in general, they do try to make him more sympathetic than he probably was in real life, particularly with the angle of wanting to prove the native in some way or another. I mean, it's a similar sort of situation with, like, a lot of emancipationists were also somewhat racist, you know?
Yeah.
It's necessarily, like,
yeah.
There's often a case of conflicting ideologies for people who... Like one guy who chronicled the slave narrative in a very interesting way was also extremely racist. Like, there was something very...
And there's a racism to the noble savage concept that's kind of there.
Absolutely.
Too. And I don't feel, again, like the movie really goes out of its way to justify that. I mean, not to equivocate that and balance it, I guess. I mean, I don't know. You see them just like killing people and it's never, I don't know. It's just... It's so much like going for that of its time thing without commenting on it successfully enough for me that the argument between the husband and wife too just kind of it just feels out of place when it does come up for me, you know. I don't know.
Well, see, that's what I felt the film was trying to go for. Like, when he comes home at one point, he says, like, has anyone walked the dog? Like, he just can't survive in that world. He wants to be out of that house as much as possible.
Yeah.
While still wanting to be a part of that family and that society, but he never is truly comfortable in it whatsoever. And that's why I like this film, is that I like a film that's sort of all leading to the ending. And I thought the ending was an absolutely remarkable sequence, an absolutely brilliant sequence.
Let's talk about the ending, yeah.
Because this is a spoiler podcast, so for those who don't know, Percy Fawcett, we're going to spoil what happened to the man. He disappeared on his third trip. He and his son went out, and they were never found. It was sort of the MH370 of its day, is a good comparison. It was like big, big news. Their trip down there was highly advertised. The early 1900s were a big sort of boom for... I would say rock star explorers, people like Percy Fawcett and Ernest Shackleton, like they were the big, big names and everyone was following their adventures.
Definitely
and what they were doing.
That. Definitely got that vibe. Yeah, they did that.
Because it was the rise of mass media and before we mapped everything. So there was this sort of last ditch effort to find the last places on Earth we haven't found before. And they were famous for disappearing and, supposedly, according to the book, over 100 people died trying to find them and they were never found. So they do this interesting thing where the ending is itself ambiguous, where he and his son are captured by native people in this sort of beautiful glow-lit thing, and then they are given something to drink, which may be poison, maybe drugs, and he and his son accept that they are going to embrace the mystery of whatever the hell's going to happen to them, and they're being seen, being passed out and taken off to some unknown fate. And I love that ending because I feel like it was, just a really clever way of keeping it ambiguous while still thematically working very well for the movie. I was at more of a, we'll get to my score later, but more of a 6 or 7 before I got to that point. And I just found the ending so moving that the whole film sort of clicked into place for me by the end of that. And also, I just think the cinematography by Darius Condi is incredible. I also want to just shout out like one of my favorite edits they did, which I thought was incredible, which is that they're on the train going to this final journey, and it intercuts like a sequence of the train moving with like the same speed dolly over his wife's bed and his kid's bed, and sort of a very great, beautiful image.
It was so quick.
Moving.
It was so quick, though. Like, I could barely glean like what the point of that flashback was. Those edits were so quick, and they were there the whole time. I do agree with you, though. I really did love the last scene. I thought that was beautiful.
Because that's what I think worked for me, and I'm curious how the ending and the final shot. James Gray is known for his final shots with mirrors. He loves his mirror shot.
Yeah, I was like, all right. She's always in the jungle because that's where her heart is. Remember, why is it in a mirror? Like, what's the reason?
He loves his mirrors.
But what's the reason that it's in a mirror? Like, is there a reason, or does it just look cool? Because I really kind of think it's the second one.
It might be because The Immigrant also ends with this incredibly choreographed shot that's kind of pointless, where the two people are leaving and the guy's in a mirror and just outside the window you can see the boat leaving with the other person, and it's just like perfectly framed, and it's like, it's way too elaborate for what is just essentially like, well, they're not together anymore. But I don't mind, but I do agree that maybe the mirror was unnecessary, but I like the way that they edit in the jungle, there's like an interesting sequence where he's talking to a fortune teller and she's like, your heart is always in the jungle. And then when it cuts back to him, he's in the jungle and she's in the jungle as well. And like, they're clearly not green screen. They are clearly actually there. And there's some sort of interesting surreal edits like that, which I found very fascinating in the film. And the final sequence is sort of this mystical gathering, if you will, of the entire film leading up to him embracing the mystery of the jungle and the mystery of the end of his life, whatever kind of life that is, in some way or another. It is a death scene, whether he lived or not, we don't know, but death of his cultured self or death of his main self in general. And that's why I like the movie. It's sort of a big metaphysical take on failure and death, and it's a tower experience.
Well, yeah, I get, yeah, where you're coming from with the mysticism of it. Like, that part of me really did like want to like the movie, and it did carry me through it in terms of like, and it is powerful, I think, whenever his son's like, we're gonna fucking die, like we're gonna die here, and he just kind of looks at him and he doesn't say we're not gonna die, but he basically says we're more alive than like any men who have never seen this, and yeah, like we're more alive than most men have the fortune to be, so I'm fine with dying. Like that I did like, and I get the quest that runs throughout it. This is kind of the thematic problem I sort of had with it too, is that for me it's the point of the movie for me, and this is kind of the theme that I latched on to in the conflict, was the whole like irony, right, that he's obsessed with finding this relic of a lost civilization, and the fascination for him is that like this, you know, thing that was achieved in a jungle that we take for granted in just our own society, civilization, right, that the drive and like the spirit of man was able to like come together and like dominate the jungle and make this beautiful place. And like that's what he's obsessed with, kind of. But like the base unit of a civilization, if you think about it, to me is a family. And like his pursuit of that ideal and of like the significance and the history of civilization and what place, you know, this particular spot had in it just totally kind of rips his family apart throughout the film. And like at some point his son calls him on that, and then he and his son bond like more than ever over the shared pursuit of that, right? But then for me that kind of breaks down if he and his son choose to remain in the city when they could return home, which if you believe they survived, which is kind of what's meant by the compass getting sent back, that's a weird unresolved kind of, and I don't mind it being like unresolved. I just like, is that, I don't understand the statement the film is making at that point, at that juncture. It's like is family and like finding a particular person you love not as important as like pursuing whatever makes you feel most alive? Or is it like, I don't understand how the ending can be both about that and about like whether they lived or died. You know what I mean? Like, did they choose to stay there or did they die? Or, you know, like there's a weird kind of confluence of themes there that doesn't quite work out for me.
Right. So you're saying it would make more sense if he was dead than if he was alive.
Yeah, I guess. But like, and the end of it seems, the point of it seems to be that she believes he's alive and then he found it and that's what matters, right? But then if he found it, why wouldn't he come home? Like, what, did he just love it so much that he loved it more than her? Like, that's just like, and I understand that it's kind of a subtle message. It bothers me more than I think maybe the film meant it to. I don't know
right,
if that was just my response to it. And like that's not what the film was about, because I think that conflict was in there. It's just kind of a drop thread for me. I don't think like the mysticism of it is an excuse for not trying to make some kind of statement on that. Does that make sense?
Right. I think where I disagree is that I think the mysticism sort of is the statement.
Yeah.
Like I think it is about Fawcett feeling completely lost and trying to find what he wants in the world and finally finding it at the end, and in a sense being with family, with his son, and being in the jungle as well. It is all sort of one and the same, I feel like. And it is a selfish act. I mean, there is something very selfish about it, and I think you can't deny that it is inherently selfish, but I don't think it's also not interesting or not noble or not, in some ways, I feel like, enviable. Like, I do feel there is something interesting about, you know, being the only ones to experience the things that he is about to experience, you know. And again, I feel like it is the way you have to deal with anybody leaving for some grander purpose. I mean, it's the thing that Steven Spielberg always said about the end of Close Encounters of a Third Kind.
Yeah, that's actually what I was thinking about the whole time.
Yeah, he says that if he made that movie today, the dad would not have left. He would have decided to stay with his family. And I think people change, you know what I mean? And I think there are, maybe just at this current juncture, I view the idea
I'll say this, it's better than Close Encounters. Okay, I'll give you
that. Oh, really?
Wow. I'll give you that point, because Close Encounters to me was just like, why him? Like, the whole time, that's all I could think. It's like, why Richard Dreyfuss? And I remember, like, my dad loved it when it came out. You know, he was like, in that moment in his generation, and it like astounded him and everything. And I asked him that question. He was like, because he was chosen. And he just kind of laughed. And I was like, yeah, because he's Richard Dreyfuss, right? And it's like, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like, oh, okay, sure. Like, that makes it make sense.
Have you seen that man? He's adorable. Yeah. I'd want him on my spaceship. Absolutely.
Reminds me of Cocoon, too. Cocoon kind of does the same sort of thing. But I think it's better in Cocoon, yeah, even, than it is in Close Encounters.
And Cocoon always, because I feel bad for Steve Guttenberg in Cocoon, because Steve Guttenberg is going to jail. Because, like, 20 old people just fucking peer. Right. Like, he's going to jail. right. Well, shall we rate Lost City of Z?
Oh, God, yes. You want me to go first?
I'll go first. I'll give you the... I'll let you...
stew on my dissenting own opinion.
Yeah, you can base your number off mine. Mm. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. It doesn't go up there with the great jungle epics. It's no Fitzcarraldo. It's no Apocalypse Now. But I appreciate what Gray was going for here. He said he sort of wanted to make a modern David Lean film, and I think that's sort of what he did. He made a sprawling epic that explores very bizarre and overall weird, but I think ultimately satisfying themes that involve death and mystery and mysticism and family and war and the need for honor. And it's a bit of a mess, so I can't deny it, but I think the fact that the ending is so strong, that it's leading to such a central point, is what makes it interesting. I can't deny I don't really want to go back and watch it right away. I can't deny I'm not one of those critics who loves it, but I get why critics love it and I get why critics hate it. And I think it is one of those films that I can't recommend. I can only give my own score, and I can say maybe you're going to see it and see what I saw, and maybe you're going to see it and just think this guy's an asshole and he isn't watching and it was boring. But I got a lot of care and interest, and at the very least, I think it's a film that's worth seeing on the big screen, because it's a beautifully shot film and it's a beautifully edited film. So just on a technical level, I found it incredibly interesting. I'm not going to rush out to see the next James Gray film, but I still find him a fascinating director. I'm glad he's around, even if his films frustrate me to no end. But this one actually gave me sort of a satisfying conclusion, which all the ones have not. So that's why I'm giving it an 8 out of 10. All right, Trevor, bring in the negative.
I'm going to give it a 6, because six for effort, I feel like. I get a lot of what you're talking about, and like, there are just a lot of scenes in there. The cinematography didn't necessarily was a point for me. I guess maybe I didn't appreciate just how like maybe nuanced it was, but I don't know. Like the scene when they just come across the opera in the middle of the jungle, like, and just how just magic that is. Like, I do love those moments in this movie, but it is just walking such a weird tonal and like pacing line the whole time that it's just ultimately too disorienting and too wooden in terms of like its characters and its dialogue for me to really like get my heart invested in it, even though I do recognize that there's a lot of heart in it. Also, there was one moment that I really wanted to happen that didn't, which is whenever they encounter piranhas for the first time. Like, there's so much going on that they can't, like, really appreciate the fact properly and take a moment to acknowledge that there are, like, flesh-eating fish in the water. And I just really needed a moment where they're like, fuck, what are these fish? Like, what the fuck is this? Like, I really needed that that moment. And, like, the rest of the time, they're just kind of waiting around in the water like it never happened. And I needed that a little, just for some release, sort of. Because the perilousness of the jungle is, like, there the whole time. But it's just sort of, like, part of the experience, you know? It's like, it's like when you go to Disneyland and there are lions and, like, screaming children. You know, it's just, like, part of the, it's just, like, the hazards, you know? Like, there's no, like, actual danger until the end, I guess, that the protagonists are going to suffer the same fate as their companions just dropping like flies all around them, namelessly and without much consequence. But they definitely have protagonist powers. But yeah, I'm going to give it a 6. That's my take on this one.
Well, the Movie Gang Podcast gives Lost City of Z a 7. That is our overall score.
I can live with that. I can live with it.
I think so too. All right. Well, we want to thank you guys for listening. We want to thank Jack, who's got engaged this week. So that's why he's been busy. So yay, Jack.
Jack will be a great family man, I'm sure. Much, much better than Fawcett.
Jack will never leave Katie to go off in the jungle and find his lost city. I think we can all agree that won't happen. All right. Well, next week I think we're going to be talking about Guardians of the Galaxy. But in the meantime, we thank you guys for listening. And we'll talk to you next week. Bye.